and we're off. The government has failed to shut us down. It's Deep Thinking, the motorcycle road racing podcast with Ed Sorbo, Michael Gugis.
And two dogs.
Two dogs, Churchill.
Show number 10.
Oh, that's right. Churchill, be cool, Churchill. Don't bite. You can bite Ed all you want. And
he did.
And it's a she. And Little Man, who is just...
Well, she has good taste.
She has good taste, and Little Man has a tail that has solved the problem of perpetual motion. I wish I had that kind of energy. Oh, God.
Don't suggest that. The PETA folks will get mad.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
They have a picture of dogs harnessed for energy and tails wagging.
No,
torture.
Wouldn't that be... That, the dogs wouldn't mind at all. They're just like, I'm just wagging my tail, dude. You know? Look at... God, I wish I had this level of contentment and happiness in my life. Look at them. That's way
cool. Lay on the floor and see how it works for you.
And you know what? I'm going to tell you. You haven't laid on this floor. It's not bad. I feel this way just before the track goes hot in the morning. It's all just promise and adventure laying in front of you. You know? It's just great fun.
That's a classic example of the glass is half full, right? Because... What? Just before you go out on the track, promise and adventure, or death and destruction,
you know,
depending on your point of view.
Come see, come saw, tomato, tomato, you know,
let's
definitely.
Call the whole thing off.
Yeah, is that how the song went?
That's how the song went. Yeah. You say tomato, I say tomato.
Let's
and then the last line, let's call the whole thing, because it rhymes.
Quitters.
Yeah.
Oh, God, what are we going to talk about in this episode? Oh, right, we are going to talk about... Going on the track, be a track day racer, a club level, a track day rider, club level racer, or pro racer. How do you go faster?
Rossi's gonna listen in on
he's
this one.
Need
he's
gonna need to
like, he wants
because he's definitely
gotta
gonna
go faster. Well, Rossi in his case is simple. He just needs a little more head turn. He needs to keep his head and eyes more level with the horizon, with the world, and he needs to look farther around the corners.
You know, it's
but
actually...
the thing about head turns is it's a threshold thing. So in other words, it only makes so much difference, and you can get used to whatever it is you're doing,
right?
And it doesn't screw you up anymore.
Yes, that's
so
true.
So in other words, you walk to the edge of a really tall building in the balcony, and you look down, and you get that momentary vertigo feeling,
right.
Like the ground's moving or whatever,
right,
and then it goes away.
Yep.
That's the threshold. It affects your perception of speed and where you are in the world and everything, but only so much, because then your eyes go, oh, wait a minute, we're not actually falling.
Right.
And they straighten out the brain.
You know, it's funny, talking about riding positions, I just read something where Scott Redding actually said the riding position in MotoGP is shifting back towards having the center of gravity closer to the center of the machine. You no longer need, because there's so much traction with the tires, you no longer need those crazy lean angles. You don't have to use them anymore. Hang off angles.
Yeah.
You don't need that anymore. You can actually lean the bike over that far, and it works just fine, you know? So it'll be interesting to see.
Well, that's no surprise, since I've been saying that all along,
yes,
that the crazy hang off is stupid.
I know, but the problem is that you were saying that, and you were wrong. You just went, now the technology has caught up. Now you are correct. It's really funny that Scott Redding is saying it, too, because apparently he touched his helmet down on a curbing somewhere during a race. And it's like, you know, so what's next? You're just going to look like a hockey player on one side.
Well, and of course, the drag in your helmet thing, you're just doing that for show off.
Yeah.
It's not, you're going way slower when you're doing that.
On That's the bright side, if you're eighth and you're still getting people, the photographer, to take pictures of you and your bike with all of its sponsors.
I suppose
logos.
If you want to take a grinder to your helmet, go ahead.
Hey.
I don't recommend
when
such things.
Well,
why don't you get a knife and poke holes in the air fence, you know?
No. You're missing the point. If you do this, and you're getting free helmets, and you're getting paid for you to wear a helmet, and if you're getting basically...
Back to our sponsorship show.
Yeah,
it's not a free helmet.
Yeah.
You earned it by work you did.
Granted, but you also get paid for getting exposure. And if the photographers are lined up to see some lunatic put his head on the pavement, and there's shots
how
worldwide.
Many how many photographers are lined up to take a picture of you when you win a race
just
at the podium? More
granted,
than are taking pictures of you dragging your helmet.
But if you have no chance of winning, hey... Dude, there are people who've made good careers in NASCAR
There's
who
lots
have never
of people
even gotten
who
close
no
to a podium.
So the topic today is how to go faster.
Right.
Which obviously we can't cover in only 20 minutes.
Right.
But we're going to try to hit a few highlights.
Why are we talking about this?
Because we were trying to think of an idea.
No, dude, you got an email from somebody. I got an email.
You got an email.
Yeah, we both got emails. So people are asking, like we know. I am talented but humble. Ed is talented but completely insane. There's no humble in me. Somewhere in the middle, we might be able to pass along something. So, you know, and plus, it's more than just that. You know, to me, again, you know, 20 years of club racing, it's not just about how to go fast. Because anybody can, you can learn how to go faster. You know, I've gotten advice from pro racers. Here, you go do this. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm not doing that. Because they're, you know, Rich Oliver once said when he was young, the way he learned to go faster was, and this was like a quote, just fire it into a corner and sort out whatever happens.
We used to get away with a lot more back when frames were heavy and the bikes flexed anyway. So when you bent them a little bit, you couldn't tell. And of course, the speeds were way, way lower.
Yeah, because traction was much
lower. Tires alone have changed things to where you take a corner that you used to go 30 miles an hour in. Mm-hmm. You're now going 65, mm-hmm. right? Well, crashing at 65 is worse than crashing at 35.
Right.
So,
you know.
So the number one thing is to have a plan.
Yeah.
It kind of doesn't matter what your plan is. If right. you if especially if you wrote it down. Mm-hmm. If you go, I'm going to go try to do this, and then you write down what happened, the what happened is either going to be better or worse. And then you can decide, okay, I don't want to do that anymore, or I want to do more of that.
Right.
Right? The thing you have to avoid is just trying to go fast.
Yes.
Just trying harder, that's how you get killed. You have to go out and work on skills, skill sets, ideas. I remember a specific day of racing very early when I started racing in Hawaii. And I don't remember. It was in the first year for sure.
Uh-huh.
All I did all day long was work on braking later. I yeah, guarantee you that I was slowing down more than I needed to. I was just working on the technique of slowing the motorcycle down.
Right.
That day of practice still carries with me now.
Yeah.
If I'm heading towards the corner next to you, I feel that I can brake later, harder, slow down faster, and need to slow down less than you will need to do because of the confidence that I built up that day. I still remember that feeling of when I went from being, well, braking feels kind of sort of vaguely wiggly-woggly,
right,
to now, wow, braking is this really firm, positive thing that I can tell exactly what the motorcycle's doing.
So you had a plan. You practiced that
plan.
Yeah,
and it was even a wimpy plan. It was only just brake later.
Right.
And it evolved on its own to braking firmer, braking harder, braking longer, all of that stuff. Yeah, you got to have some idea, and then you got to go work on it.
That makes sense. A lot of schools to give you, the customer, the perception of value, give you a whole lot of data.
Yes.
But you need time to make that data work.
Oh, yeah. This is a lifetime project to learn to race motorcycles. Everybody, even the guys who know the most, will tell you that every time they go out, they just discover something more that they can do.
Right.
Learning whatever the next thing is you need to learn just opens the gate to yet more.
Exactly.
It's like you build a bigger telescope, guess what? You see farther into a never-ending universe.
Right, right.
Right?
It's like opening a door to a room and finding there's a door on the other end of the room.
Exactly.
You know?
So it doesn't really matter what thing you choose to work on. You work on the thing that you're having the most trouble with, right?
Or work on the thing you're having the most fun with.
You know,
I don't care.
I love that thought.
Which is?
Work on the thing that you like.
Yeah.
All the examples that we have of when you get to hear a crew chief and a rider talking,
right?
It's always about, you know, fix this problem, fix
right.
this so problem, this thing, right?
Solving something.
It's time to accentuate the positive.
Oh dear.
Right. So let's use me as an example. For a long time, I did all my passing on the braking because of that day when I worked on the braking, and I got to be better than the guys I was battling with on brakes.
Right.
And so I just kept accentuating that. I never even tried to pass people on straightaways and stuff. I knew I'm going to get them on the brakes. And I practiced braking harder, better, all that stuff. And I got better and better and better and better at it.
Right.
So you don't have to come in from a session and just think about all the shit you did wrong.
Right.
Well, guess what? You came in from the session on your motorcycle. You did most things
you
right.
You did the most things right.
You exactly. didn't fall down.
Didn't fall down.
So work on improving the stuff that you're already good at.
I mean, unless you're getting paid. Now, again, we have to make that distinction between, you know.
But even at the paid level, who's more of a pro racer than a fighter pilot?
Good point.
It's the same thing as racing, right? There's a factory-sponsored ride,
right?
But it's bigger because it's about death.
Right.
So a really good friend of mine, Bill Wickersham, used to teach people to fly fighter planes for the Air Force.
Okay.
Well, guess what? Flying a fighter plane is way more expensive than flying a motorcycle.
Oh, geez.
So when you go to fighter pilot school or any of these flying schools, there's all these specific things you got to do. You do classroom, you work your way. When it's time to go fly, you're going to execute these three maneuvers in this order, blah, 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 and then you're going to go back and land.
Right.
Right? And you got to do them. And everything is always harder than the last time you went up. They're trying to teach you the new thing.
Right.
Right? And so it's very stressful.
Yes.
You can get, but guess what? When you don't make one of the hurdles, you're out.
Wow.
Okay?
Because
there's 400 guys who want the same ride.
Right. They've all seen Top Gun.
So one of the things that Bill does, and this is why he's such a great instructor, is because he knows about the person. He goes, look, Fred, whatever Fred's thing is really good at. Fred's really good at doing loops. I don't know. Whatever the example is, okay? Well, guess what? Between exercise one and two, we have to get over here to do it. Do a loop on the way, Fred. Right? Do the thing you're really good at. Build some confidence.
There you go.
Make yourself happy.
There you go.
Don't scare yourself.
Yes.
Right? And then guess what? If I believe that I can break good, then I stay on the gas all the way to the braking marker.
Right.
And I make one move from full throttle to squeezing the brake lever in one motion. I don't close the throttle and coast.
Right.
I just reach for the brake lever and squeeze it. Check it out. If my wrist was below my knuckles, when I reach for the brake lever, that's motion is my hand rolling forward. Do it right now. You can see the motion.
Right.
I don't need to make two motions, close and then squeeze. I can just squeeze. I go from full throttle to brakes. There's no pause. The bike is stable on the throttle. Now it's stable on the brakes. Instead of incorporating or introducing a little period of instability of coasting with the throttle closed and taking away confidence and then braking when I'm already... No, I just go from, aha, I'm going to do it right. Aha, I did it right. Aha, and now it's time to turn in.
So that's one skill set. But you touched on something earlier. What you'd get with that skill set by working on that, taking a little time out of your track day to go, okay.
Or your practice.
Yeah, or your practice.
Or your race.
And I'm going to go, I don't care about my lap times this time. I don't care about beating Chuck or Kevin. You know,
you should never care about your lap time.
Yeah, you always care about your lap
time. No, you should care about your lap consistency.
No, you always care about your lap times, dude. When you go...
I care about being in front.
You go over to that printout of lap times at a track day.
And you look for the consistency, not the one fast lap.
You know what? That's not what you see. Those dudes are all sitting there with one hand on their zipper, ready to whip it out. You
one
know,
of the main reasons you're behind me.
I'm not saying
okay, but get
me.
To your point.
Did I have a point? Wait, there must have been one around here someplace.
I was also distracted
by the dog snoring. I think it's little man. It's great. Right. You give up a track. You give up a session. And you say, all I'm going to work on is braking.
Yes.
Or I'm having trouble in this turn. I'm having trouble in turn three. All I'm going to worry about is how to get through turn three better.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people struggle with that idea because they paid X amount of money for a track day. They're going to go as fast as they can on every lap or they're wasting their money. You know?
And there's some fun to that, right? What are you going to do today? I'm going to ride around in the sunshine just as fast as I can.
Right.
Great. But
it doesn't make you faster.
I'm going to ride around in the sunshine just as fast as I can for the rest of my life.
Faster.
I started doing this in 1982.
Right.
So no one track day, no one session, no one race is really very important.
No.
If I work on skill sets instead of just trying to be the fastest guy all the time, the end result is that I'm going to be able to race until I'm 70 because I crash less, because I know more,
because
I had more fun, I used up less tires, all of that stuff.
Right.
The payoff is huge.
You're not frustrated. You're working within your means.
I don't scare myself.
And your means are much greater.
Yep.
So that's point number one. Give yourself permission. Make the time to make yourself better. No matter what your plan
absolutely.
Is, you have to have time to implement it.
Yeah.
You have to have time to implement it.
You should go on the track with a plan always.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes the plan is to break in the new engine.
Yeah.
Right? Well, while you're breaking in the new engine, which means you can't use more than 80% throttle or whatever your instructions are,
right?
Ride exactly on the best line you have. You don't have to go full speed. You should be able to walk on the perfect line. So you sure as hell should be able to ride on the perfect line at 80% of normal speed. In other words, you never practice doing it wrong. You never practice going slow.
Yes.
Okay?
Okay.
You never go, oh yeah, this line is okay, and when I'm up to speed, I'll move over to the edge of the track. No! Use the right line all the time. Okay, so you've got a plan, and you're working that plan, and it's all the time. A race is an opportunity to get better.
Yes, definitely.
You don't just ride the same speed the whole time. If you learn something in the race, apply it and go faster. Well, guess what then?
What?
Every time you go on the track, it doesn't matter if it's a track day or a race practice or a race. You're working to do the best you can. You're always working on skill sets. You never try to go fast.
Okay, so work on skill sets. Work on skill sets that scare you. Work on skill sets that don't scare you. Work on the ones that make
When you're going out to work on the thing you're having trouble with.
Right.
Well, on all the other parts of the track, when you're practicing shifting, you're practicing rolling the throttle, you're still doing all of that stuff. So, okay, I'm going to go work on this thing that I'm having a hard time with. At the same time, over there, I'm going to think about this thing that I'm good at.
Okay.
For two reasons. One, you'll get even better at it.
Right.
That'll be your strong suit. And two, you'll be unscaring yourself.
How does one unscare themselves?
Doing something that you're confident with. So, Road Atlanta, turn one. A difficult downhill off camber right hander with bumps.
With bumps?
Yeah.
Because the downhill and the off camber just weren't enough.
They had cement patches.
Right.
And I don't know if there's cement patches there now, right?
They also have landmines and snipers, you know?
So, you're going to go out of the pits and you're going to go around and you're going to get up to speed. And turn one at Road Atlanta is pretty much the first full speed. Okay, I'm starting my flying lap now.
Right.
In the beginning of that lap, you turn in a little bit too early and you slow down a little bit too much and you had to coast and boom on the bump. Fuck. Well, now your whole lap just started with fuck instead of ha-ha, I'm a stud. Right? So I hate Road Atlanta. And I especially hate it when they put the fucking turnstile turn in place of turn three.
Right.
So I drive all the way across the country going, fuck, I hate this track. Fuck, I hate this track. Guess what my results were?
You didn't do well.
So the next year I go, screw that. I drove across the country saying, I love Road Atlanta. I love Road Atlanta. And I knew that turn one was the key for me.
Right.
So at the end of the outlap, now look, I had tire warmers and I took a good warm-up lap and it's a bright sunny day and the track is all clean and all that good stuff. I go barreling into turn one. I know what the good braking marker is. I fucking just wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. And I don't brake until I get to the good braking marker. And I do the correct downshifts, which would have been two. And I throw it in at the right spot. And I get on the gas right away, even though I'm a little bit, and it all worked. And I went, ha, you are the stud you think you are. And I went way faster than the previous year. And I had a way better result. And as a matter of fact, the track I hated the most is the track that I got on the podium at. One time, right? So turn it into a positive. Have a plan. Focus on the positive stuff.
Okay.
And work on the negative stuff.
For your club racer or your track day rider who's not as experienced as you, who can't bring themselves to that point. Because that's, you know, I have to, dude, every time I go to Willow, I have to work my way up to getting to that for that turn one braking marker.
So, the example of the braking. From full throttle to squeezing the brakes in one move is difficult, scary to do.
It's a technique.
It's a technique that you need to lap master. Okay.
Right.
So you practice it in the pits with the bike turned off.
Okay.
Okay. And so right now, let's say your braking marker is the 5 cone.
Okay.
And you're coasting to the 4 cone and then you apply the brake.
Got it.
No problem. When you go out on this lap, I want you to go 6 inches past the 5 cone, roll off, and then squeeze the brake 6 inches before the four cone. Right. Just make a small improvement. Hey. Ah, that worked. Okay. Next lap. Okay. And make another smaller. Dude, you get down to you're only making a millimeter improvement. That's fine.
Right.
You're going in the right direction. Little. You're never going to do a perfect lap in your entire life.
Right.
You will never execute a perfect lap.
Right.
That's why this is a great sport, right?
Yep.
And so just keep working towards it a little bit better each time.
So what you're saying, if I'm hearing you correctly and I'm not listening to the voices in my head, is that what you do is you start out by setting breaking markers, turn-in markers,
realistic goals
that you're comfortable with begin with. Mm-hmm. And then you practice the techniques from there and improve from there.
People are always surprised when they ask me, what do I do my first time on a track I've never been on? I'm like, dude, it's the same as riding on a road you've never been on.
Right.
You ride at the speed where you know that you can...
You're going to come out of
that corner. Whatever's on the other side of the corner, you're going to be okay. The next lap, you go a little bit faster. Now, the definition of a little bit faster is a whole bunch of things, right?
Right.
I got full throttle a little sooner. Or maybe I used full throttle.
Right.
Right? I used full throttle for longer. I squeezed the brakes a little later. I squeezed the brakes a little harder. I got off the brakes a little sooner. I tipped the bike in a little quicker. I started my roll on a little bit. It's a million little things all coming together, but you do it just a tiny bit more.
Time. Now, with that little bit more thing, two things I want to mention on that. You and everybody else who tries to teach people how to do this talk about how important it is to be on the throttle, okay, on the gas. I remember Chris Ulrich in one of his columns talk about he was always taught at the apex you should be very close to where the throttle is at the stop. You're going to be, you know, the bike is more stable and it's happier when you're on the gas. Okay, they can't hear you nod. You have to say yes.
That's yes, Michael Gooch, you're absolutely
that's
right.
There you go.
It's a base. But you can do this in your car. Coast around the corner in your car.
Right.
Then go back and do the same corner at a steady speed and the car handles better.
Right. Now, that's the one thing I see a lot of guys, because I tend to ride underpowered bikes at track days. And so guys on leader bikes go by me, guys on 600s go by me, and then I watch them, and they'll coast past the apex of a corner.
Yeah. So they scared themselves going in.
Right.
So there's four things you can do on a motorcycle.
Four things. Wait, okay.
You can speed up.
Slow down.
You can slow down. You can change gears and you can change direction.
Or you can fall.
That's not on. You can have sex on a motorcycle, but not while you're racing.
Okay.
You have to do all four things approaching a corner.
Right.
In the corner, you're only doing one.
Right.
Exiting the corner, you're only doing one. It's all about getting into the corner. I guarantee if you're late getting on the throttle, let's say you're 10 feet late getting on the throttle.
Right.
If you brake 20 feet sooner so that you slow down that much more and then get on the gas when you should have, you might think, oh, I'm going to go slower because I braked 20 feet slower. No, the getting on the gas 10 feet sooner is exponentially more beneficial. Not because the speed, because the stability and the speed you then carry through the corner.
So you back, so.
Yeah, you here, back so up, the
tip,
get it done
the
early.
The tip is very simple. Yep. Back up your braking point. Get your braking done, especially for the track day riders who aren't trying to apex brake to the corner. That's not for them yet. But get yourself wherever you're comfortable so you can get on the throttle early. And that pays benefits not only in speed coming into the corner, but the fun you're going to have because the bike is more stable.
And I just had another thought.
That's what that
statement.
Snow was.
One of the things I mentioned was I get off the brakes.
Yes.
Okay? You will hear a lot of statements from people who are faster than you about things like, oh, it's the most important thing is to let go of the brakes. You have to understand where they are in relation to you on the skill triangle, skill slope.
Got it.
Once you've mastered braking late, carrying speed into the corner, yada, yada, yada,
right,
compared to another guy on the same kind of bike with the same kind of skill levels,
okay?
So let's say I learned this from Chuck Sorensen. So me and Chuck are on 250s going into a corner.
Okay.
Between the two of us, the guy who gets off the brakes a little sooner, which that means the guy who's carrying more corner speed is going to have an advantage.
Right.
That doesn't mean that you should work on getting off the brakes sooner.
No, because
you need to work on getting the right corner entry speed.
The corner speed.
Later on, you can try to let go of the brakes and carry a quarter mile an hour more.
Applying the brakes, the amount that you apply the brakes and when you let the brakes off is all about setting your corner speed.
Yeah.
That's all it's about.
And one of the pitfalls of getting faster is where you get the information from and what skill level they're
at. Oh, yeah. By the time you're winning races, everybody's lying to you.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. One last thing. I know it's almost time, but damn it, I need to be heard. I shall not be silenced.
You can't be silenced.
What was I going to say? Right. How do you know where to brake? Reference points.
First time when you don't have any idea where to break,
right. So
you go back to the street riding,
right?
Thing,
but that's fine. But the trick is that you notice where you're doing it.
Oh, you know what?
That's what you got. You got to do that. You got to notice where you're doing things.
Exactly. So where are you when you notice where you're doing things? It's really common for me working with people, and I recognized this in myself a long time ago and fixed it and know to look for it.
Right.
So I'm watching my rider. He's going into the turn. He breaks at the 5-cone. I can tell he's breaking at the 5-cone,
right?
Because I see him sit up. I see the front go down. I hear the noise change. There's no question he's at the 5-cone.
Right.
I come in the pits. We're talking. I say, where do you break for turn one? He says, at the 3-cone. Is he a lying bastard?
No.
He's looking at the 3-cone and he starts breaking. So he remembers the 3-cone. Mm-hmm. One of the useful early things to master is paying attention to what you just passed, where
you
really are. And the reason for that isn't that you couldn't have used it. If you always braked when you could see the 3-cone, it would be
That's
a marker.
Right.
When you're trying to make notes and think about what you did, then it gets confused.
So
you need to know where you really are.
So the other skill set is learning the ability to know where you are. Notice where you are. Count the cones. Look at the seams on the pavement, the stains, all of that stuff. I remember we were at a track day, Chuck and Kevin and I, a few years ago.
Don't look at them. Use your peripheral vision
to keep track of them. Not them. But one of them was asking, where do I brake going a particular corner? And this was funny. And it's just a track I've ridden a million times. So I've had the opportunity to refine my reference points. And they said, where are you braking? And I said, there is a stain on the pavement between the 4 and the 3 braking cones, closer to the 3 than the 4. And they just looked at me with this blank face, like, what are you talking about? That is, while you're learning, if you really are practicing to get faster, you cannot do it without additional data. And the ability, the data acquisition of looking for reference points gives you the ability to try the things that you're talking about. When you say, I'm going to wait and I'm going to break a little later, well, you've got to know where you are on the track, where you're breaking in the first place, and how you compare that. If I'm going to wait to try to throw it in later and do a later apex on the corner, you've got to know where you're turning in to begin with.
It's got to be later than what?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So come up with the plan, practice the plan, have fun while you're doing it, learn the ability to perceive the track around you. I think that's a lot.
Scientific approach. All things. 2-minute warning.
Oh, what were we going to talk about?
I have no idea. I can't remember.
Oh, I remember. Old people and why we should let them into the RC 390 Cup.
Oh, yeah, right.
I think that's a great idea.
Because of the knowledge, the experience, the skill that can be imparted to the young people. Now, the solution of how you figure out who you can let in, what experienced guys are allowed to race in that class,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know exactly. My way of solving it would be on a case-by-case basis, right? Matt Mladen, no.
Why?
Bruce Lind, yes.
Why no Matt Mladen?
Because he's too fast.
Well, who cares?
Well, so you're trying to bring up new talent, you got to let them get onto the podium. Just like the factories need to be able to win, right? They need a chance of being winning. These new kids, that's what the class is for. They need to be a chance to win. You could maybe do it where all these old guys are dressed in black and they don't count in the points. They're just in the battle. And then only the kids actually go to the podium.
You could do that.
There's I love the KTM concept and I love the chance for kids and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But at the same time, I think you're losing an opportunity when you only got people that are new to it racing together.
My philosophy is somewhat different. I think that since we're picking on Matt, which is relatively safe because he's half a world away. Okay,
although he has an airplane.
I know, and believe me, there's only this.
And he probably would get wound up enough to try to do something about it.
Exactly, pounded on the door of the Batcave over here, right? But no, hey, if Matt wants to race in the RC 390 class, God bless him. Let him have fun. If you're an up-and-coming kid, now you've got a yardstick to measure yourself against. And if you really are
That's the way I think. I agree with that. That's what I want. But the parents of these kids aren't going to be down with that.
Well, maybe not. On the other hand, if your kid has finished second in every race that year to Matt Mladen, that kid's not going to have any difficulty getting sponsorship.
I agree 100%.
That kid's not going to.
Another way they could
all.
Do it is you could have two classes run together.
Yeah.
You could have the kids' class
right.
and the adult class, and they could be on the track together and score separately.
Yeah. I think we're missing a little bit of a trick here. I really do.
Well, yeah, and especially with those bikes, if you got 40 of them on the bike, that's better than 20.
Exactly. Right. You know, why not? Absolutely, why not? And plus, We were talking about how to get out of racing. You know, last
this is
podcast.
A way to delay the inevitable.
This is a way to delay the inevitable for the guy that needs, you know, just to like chip down a little bit and shoot a little less heroin every week.
And personally for me, right, it would be a way that I could go racing at the best tracks in the country.
Yeah.
Against, in a good organization that runs on time, the things that I want.
Right.
You know, but without the high risk and the high pressure and all that stuff.
I'll tell you, that's one of the things I missed from the old AMA days when I first started watching road racing. And they'd have 8 different classes, you know, a lightweight twin class and a 125 class or whatever those things were, you know, there was an opportunity for somebody who didn't want to be the next world superbike champion.
Another reason to find a class to get old guys in, they have money.
Yeah, right.
So we just set a record for the longest show because I didn't even start.
No way.
No, I didn't even start that thing.
Did we? We can keep going.
No, we can't.
Thanks for listening. This
is
Michael Gugis. He's Ed Sorbo. That's little man who's wagging his tail like a mofo. Aloha.